and wains could be slowly hauled, but no enemy could come that way, except out of the air, if it was defended from above. At each turn of the road there were great standing stones that had been carved in the likeness of men, huge and clumsy-limbed, squatting cross-legged, with their stumpy arms folded on fat bellies. Some, in the wearing of the years, had lost all features save the dark holes of their eyes that still stared sadly at the passers-by. The riders hardly glanced at them. The Pukelmen, they called them, and heeded them little. No power or terror was left in them, but Mary gazed at them with wonder and a feeling almost of pity as they loomed up mournfully in the dusk. After a while he looked back and found that he had already climbed some hundreds of feet above the valley, but still far below he could dimly see a winding line of riders crossing the ford and filing along the road toward the camp prepared for them. Only the king and his guard were going up into the hold. At last the king's company came to a sharp brink, and the climbing road passed into a cutting between walls of rock, and so went up a short slope and out onto a wide upland. The Ferienfeld men called it, a green mountain field of grass and heath, high above the deep-delved courses of the Snowbourne, laid upon the lap of the great mountains behind. The Starkhorn southwards, and northwards the saw-toothed mass of Iron Saga, between which there faced the riders the grim black walls of the Drimmerberg, the haunted mountain rising out of steep slopes of sombre pines. Dividing the upland into two, there marched a double line of unshaped standing stones that dwindled into the dusk and vanished in the trees. Those who dared to follow that road soon came to the black Dimholt under Drimmerberg, and the menace of the pillar of stone, and the yawning shadow of the forbidden door. Such was the dark Dunharrow, the work of long-forgotten men. Their name was lost, and no song or legend remembered it. For what purpose they had made this place, as a town or secret temple or a tomb of kings, none could say. Here they labored in the dark years, before ever a ship came to the western shores, or Gondor of the Dúnedain was built. And now they had vanished, and only the old Pukelmen were left, still sitting at the turnings of the road. Merry stared at the lines of marching stones. They were worn and black. Some were leaning, some were fallen, some cracked or broken. They looked like rows of old and hungry teeth. He wondered what they could be, and he hoped that the king was not going to follow them into the darkness beyond. Then he saw that there were clusters of tents and booths on either side of the stony way, but these were not set near the trees, and seemed rather to huddle away from them towards the brink of the cliff. The greater number were on the right, where the Ferienfeld was wider, and on the left there was a smaller camp, in the midst of which stood a tall pavilion. From this side a rider now came out to meet them, and they turned from the road. As they drew near, Merry saw that the rider was a woman with long braided hair gleaming in the twilight. Yet she wore a helm, and was clad to the waist like a warrior, and girded with a sword. "Hail, Lord of the Mark!" she cried. "My heart is glad at your returning." "And you, Eowyn?" said Théoden. "Is all well with you?" "All is well," she answered. Yet it seemed to Merry that her voice belied her, and he would have thought that she had been weeping, if that could be believed of one so stern of face. "All is well. It was a weary road for the people to take, torn suddenly from their homes. There were hard words, for it is long since war has driven us from the green fields, but there have been no evil deeds. All is now ordered, as you see, and your lodging is prepared for you, for I have had full tidings of you, and knew the hour of your coming."
"So Aragorn has come, then," said Éomer. "Is he still here?"
"No, he's gone," said Éowyn, turning away, and looking at the mountains dark against the east and south.
"Whither did he go?" asked Éomer.
"I don't know," she answered. "He came at night, and rode away yestermorn, ere the sun had climbed over the mountain tops. He's gone."
"You are grieved, daughter," said Théoden. "What's happened? Tell me. Did he speak of that road? He pointed away along the darkening lines of stones toward the Dwimmelberg. Of the paths of the dead?
Yes, Lord, said Eowyn.
And he has passed into the shadows from which none have returned. I could not dissuade him. He is gone.
Then our paths are sundered, said Aylmer. He is lost. We must ride without him, and our hope dwindles.
Slowly they passed through the short heath and upland grass, speaking no more, until they came to the king's pavilion. There Merry found that everything was made ready, and that he himself was not forgotten. A little tent had been pitched for him beside the king's lodging, and there he sat alone, while men passed to and fro, going into the king and taking counsel with him. Night came on, and the half-seen heads of the mountains westward were crowned with stars, but the east was dark and blank. The marching stones faded slowly from sight, but still behind them, blacker than the gloom, brooded the vast, crouching shadow of the Dwimmelberg. The paths of the dead, he muttered to himself. The paths of the dead. What does all this mean? They've all left me now. They've all gone to some doom. Gandalf and Pippin to the war in the east, and Sam and Frodo to Mordor, and Strider and Legolas and Gimli to the paths of the dead. But my turn will come soon enough, I suppose. I wonder what they're all talking about, and what the king means to do, for I must go where he goes now. In the midst of these gloomy thoughts, he suddenly remembered that he was very hungry, and he got up to go and see if anyone else in this strange camp felt the same. But at that very moment a trumpet sounded, and a man came summoning him, the king's esquire, to wait at the king's board. In the inner part of the pavilion was a small space, curtained off with broidered hangings and strewn with skins. And there at a small table sat Théoden and Aelmer and Eowyn and Dúnhir, Lord of Harrowdale. Merry stood beside the king's stool and waited on him, till presently the old man, coming out of deep thought, turned to him and smiled.
"Come, Master Merry Ardoch," he said. "You shall not stand. You shall sit beside me, as long as I remain in my own lands, and lighten my heart with tales."
Room was made for the hobbit at the king's left hand, but no one called for any tale. There was indeed little speech, and they ate and drank for the most part in silence, until at last, plucking up courage, Merry asked the question that was tormenting him.
"Twice now, Lord, I've heard of the paths of the dead," he said. "What are they? And where has Strider, I mean the Lord Aragorn, where has he gone?"
The king sighed, but no one answered, until at last Aelmer spoke. "We don't know, and our hearts are heavy," he said. "But as for the paths of the dead, you have yourself walked on their first steps. Nay, I speak no words of ill omen. The road that we have climbed is the approach to the door, yonder in the dim holt, but what lies beyond no man knows."
"No man knows," said Théoden, "yet ancient legend, now seldom spoken, has somewhat to report. If these old tales speak true that have come down from father to son in the house of Eol, then the door under Dwimmelberg leads to a secret way that goes beneath the mountain to some forgotten end. But none have ever ventured in to search its secrets since Baldur, son of Brego, passed the door and was never seen among men again. A rash vow he spoke as he drained the horn at that feast which Brego made to hallow new-built Meduseld, and he came never to the high seat of which he was the heir. Folk say that dead men out of the dark years guard the way and will suffer no living man to come to their hidden halls. But at whiles they may themselves be seen passing out of the door like shadows and down the stony road. Then the people of Harrowdale shut fast their doors and shroud their windows and are afraid. But the dead come seldom forth, and only at times of great unquiet and coming death."
"Yet it is said in Harrowdale," said Eowyn in a low voice, "that in the moonless nights but little while ago a great host in strange array passed by. Whence they came none knew, But they went up the stony road and vanished into the hill, as if they went to keep a tryst.
"Then why has Aragorn gone that way?" asked Merry. "Don't you know anything that would explain it?"
"Unless he has spoken words to you as his friend that we have not heard," said Aelma. "None now in the land of the living can tell his purpose.
Greatly changed he seemed to me since I first saw him in the king's house," said Eowyn. "Grimmer, older, fey, I thought him, and like one whom the dead call."
"Maybe he was called," said Theoden, "and my heart tells me that I shall not see him again. Yet he's a kingly man of high destiny, and take comfort in this, daughter, since comfort you seem to need in your grief for this guest. It's said that when the Aeorlingers came out of the north and passed at length up the Snowbourne, seeking strong places of refuge in time of need, Brego and his son Baldur climbed the stair of the hold, and so came before the door. On the threshold sat an old man, aged beyond guess of years. Tall and kingly he had been, but now he was withered as an old stone. Indeed, for stone they took him, for he moved not, and he said no word until they sought to pass him by and enter. And then a voice came out of him, as it were out of the ground, and to their amaze it spoke in the western tongue. 'The way is shut.' Then they halted and looked at him, and saw that he lived still, but he didn't look at them. 'The way is shut,' his voice said again. 'It was made by those who are dead, and the dead keep it until the time comes. The way is shut.'"
"And when will that time be?" said Baldur.
But no answer did he ever get, for the old man died in that hour and fell upon his face, and no other tidings of the ancient dwellers in the mountains of our folk ever learned. Yet maybe at last the time foretold has come, and Aragorn may pass. But how shall a man discover whether that time be come or no, save by daring the door?" said Aelma. "And that way I wouldn't go, though all the hosts of Mordor stood before me, and I were alone and had no other refuge. Alas, that a fey mood should fall on a man so great-hearted in this hour of need. Are there not evil things enough abroad, without seeking them under the earth? War is at hand." He paused, for at that moment there was a noise outside, a man's voice crying the name of Theoden, and the challenge of the guard. Presently the captain of the guard thrust aside the curtain.
"A man is here, lord," he said, "an errand rider of Gondor. He wishes to come before you at once."
"Let him come," said Theoden. A tall man entered, and Merry choked back a cry. For a moment it seemed to him that Boromir was alive again and had returned. Then he saw that it was not so. The man was a stranger, though as like to Boromir as if he were one of his kin, tall and grey-eyed and proud. He was clad as a rider, with a cloak of dark green over a coat of fine mail. On the front of his helm was wrought a small silver star. In his hand he bore a single arrow, black-feathered and barbed with steel, but the point was painted red. He sank on one knee and presented the arrow to Theoden.
"Hail, Lord of the Rohirrim, friend of Gondor," he said. "Here gone I am, errand rider of Denethor, who bring you this token of war. Gondor is in great need. Often the Rohirrim have aided us, but now the Lord Denethor asks for all your strength and all your speed, lest Gondor fall at last."
"The red arrow," said Theoden, holding it, as one who receives a summons long expected and yet dreadful when it comes. His hand trembled. "The red arrow has not been seen in the mark in all my years. Has it indeed come to that? And what does the Lord Denethor reckon that all my strength and all my speed may be?"
"That is best known to yourself, lord," said Hiergon. "But ere long it may well come to pass that Minas Tirith is surrounded, and unless you have the strength to break a siege of many powers, the Lord Denethor bids me say that he judges that the strong arms of the Rohirrim would be better within his walls than without. But he knows that we are a people who fight rather upon horseback and in the open, and that we are also a scattered people, and time is needed for the gathering of our riders.
Is it not true, Eragon, that the Lord of Minas Tirith knows more than he sets in his message? For we are already at war, as you have seen, and you don't find us all unprepared. Gandalf the Grey has been among us, and even now we are mustering for battle in the east. What the Lord Denethor may know or guess of all these things I can't say, answered Hergod. But indeed our case is desperate. My lord does not issue any command to you. He begs you only to remember old friendship and oaths long spoken, and for your own good to do all that you may. It is reported to us that many kings have ridden in from the east to the service of Mordor. From the north to the field of Dagolad there is skirmish and rumour of war. In the south the Haradrim are moving, and fear has fallen on all our coastlands, so that little help will come to us thence. Make haste, for it's before the walls of Minas Tirith that the doom of our time will be decided, and if the tide be not stemmed there, then it will flow over all the fair fields of Rohan, and even in this hold among the hills there shall be no refuge. Dark tidings, said Theoden, yet not all unguessed. But say to Denethor that even if Rohan itself felt no peril, still we would come to his aid. But we have suffered much loss in our battles with Saruman the traitor, and we must still think of our frontier to the north and east, as his own tidings make clear. So great a power as the Dark Lord seems now to wield might well contain us in battle before the city, and yet strike with great force across the river away beyond the Gate of Kings. But we will speak no longer counsels of prudence. We will come. The weapon take was set for the morrow. When all is ordered, we will set out. 10,000 spears I might have sent riding over the plain to the dismay of your foes. It will be less now, I fear. For I will not leave my strongholds all unguarded. Yet 6,000 at the least shall ride behind me. For say to Denethor that in this hour the King of the Mark himself will come down to the land of Gondor, though maybe he will not ride back. But it is a long road, and man and beast must reach the end with strength to fight. A week it may be from tomorrow's morn, ere you hear the cry of the sons of Eol coming from the north. A week, said Hergon. If it must be so, it must. But you are like to find only ruined walls in 7 days from now, unless other help unlooked for comes. Still, you may at the least disturb the orcs and swarthy men from their feasting in the White Tower. At the least we will do that, said Theoden. But I myself am new come from battle and long journey, and I will now go to rest. Tarry here this night. Then you shall look on the muster of Rohan, and ride away the gladder for the sight, and the swifter for the rest. In the morning, counsels are best, and night changes many thoughts. With that the king stood up, and they all rose. Go now each to your rest, he said, and sleep well. And you, Master Meriadoc, I need no more tonight, but be ready to my call as soon as the sun is risen. I will be ready, said Merry, even if you bid me ride with you on the paths of the dead. Speak not words of omen, said the king, for there may be more roads than one that could bear that name. But I didn't say that I would bid you ride with me on any road. Good night.
I won't be left behind, to be called for on return, said Merry. I won't be left, I won't. And repeating this over and over again to himself, he fell asleep at last in his tent. He was wakened by a man shaking him.
Wake up! Wake up, Master Hobbitler!
He cried, and at length Merry came out of deep dreams and sat up with a start. It still seemed very dark, he thought. What's the matter? He asked.
The king calls you.
But the sun has not risen yet, said Merry.
No, and will not rise today, Master Hobbitler, nor ever again, one would think, under this cloud. But time does not stand still, though the sun be lost. Make haste.
Flinging on some clothes, Merry looked outside. The world was darkling. The very air seemed brown, and all things about were black and grey and shadowless. There was a great stillness. No shape of cloud could be seen, unless it were far away westward, where the furthest groping fingers of the great gloom still crawled onwards, and a little light leaked through them. Overhead there hung a heavy roof, sombre and featureless, and light seemed rather to be failing than growing. Mary saw many folk standing, looking up and muttering. All their faces were grey and sad, and some were afraid. With a sinking heart he made his way to the king. Here gone the rider of Gondor was there before him, and beside him stood now another man, like him and dressed alike, but shorter and broader. As Merry entered, he was speaking to the king.
"It comes from Mordor, lord," he said. "It began last night at sunset. From the hills in the east fold of your realm I saw it rise and creep across the sky, and all night as I rode it came behind, eating up the stars. Now the great cloud hangs over all the land between here and the mountains of shadow, and it is deepening. War has already begun.